The question I want to deal with this morning, this afternoon, is how logical Aliyah be? We know that Rabbi Josh Fass Shlita married into the Shomrei Torah community, and they make all these Nefesh B'Nefesh videos to make you cry and to encourage you to make Aliyah. And there are many considerations, whether it's family, financial, health, and they all get in the way of Aliyah. So here's my question of the day. Should Aliyah be logical, illogical, or somewhere in the middle? This is going to be our major question. And we're going to see that there is a discrepancy in the classical Torah sources about this question, and a discrepancy in the practice of Jews today about how logical to be in the source. But before we go into the sources, who here has children or grandchildren who have made Aliyah? Who's here in that category? Oh, Rabbi Yudin, we know famously. Anyone else? Anyone else have Aliyah children or grandchildren? Okay. So, and certainly in the grandparent community, it's very sensitive where your children want to make Aliyah and you want to support them, yet it might also be very, very challenging to support them, i.e., they're going to be flying your grandchildren across the world, and it's not so clear if you're going to be seeing them, so much more. So it's a very, very sensitive sugya. So let's look at the, again, the classical sources on the matter, and then we'll try to come away with a perspective of Rav Kook, as was advertised. We'll try to appreciate the perspective of HaGaon of Avraham Yitzchak Kook, Zecher Tzadik Livracha. So here is a good old Mishnah in Maseches Ksubos, Daf Kuf Yud Amud Beis, which states, HaKol Ma'alin LeEretz Yisrael. You are allowed to force everybody to Eretz Yisrael, which means if Rabbi Yudin wants to make Aliyah and the Gadol Hador, Mrs. Shevi Yudin, does not want to make Aliyah, the halacha allows Rabbi Yudin to win the case. And a rare occasion. So the Gemara explains, who Omer La'alot, let's say the man of the house wants to make Aliyah, v'hi Omer Shelo La'alot, and she says, I do not want to make Aliyah. So kofin oto la'alos, the man is allowed to basically win and say, listen, either we make Aliyah or you're not going to be entitled to your ksuba in a blunt way. Or in contrast, he omer la'alot, let's say for a second that the woman of the home wants to make Aliyah, the who omer shelo la'alot, and the man does not want to make Aliyah. Kofin oso la'alot. So the woman's allowed to force the man to make aliyah. In love, and let's say he doesn't want to do it. Well, yotzi v'yitein ksuba. Well, she's allowed to demand that he divorce her, and she's also allowed to demand her ksuba money. So this is against that everything that I was taught. Walter Grossman, you could tell me if you were taught the same thing. When I was becoming a chassan to get married, my rebbeim taught me whatever your wife says, you should do. Walter, would you agree with that philosophy? You would. Walter would agree. Walter would agree with it. So we generally have a hashkafa of the Torah that, shalom bias is a halachic principle. It's not only cutesy, but we believe that, shalom bias is a halachic consideration. And therefore, we would more logically say that, you know what? If one member of the marriage wants to make aliyah, and another member of the marriage does not want to make aliyah, you two should probably speak it out, work it out. Maybe you could come to some middle ground. But here the Gemara is saying a very extreme conclusion, i.e., if your wife doesn't want to make aliyah, you could divorce her. She doesn't get a ksuba, or you could force her to make aliyah with you. And the same is true the other way. So we all of a sudden have a pretty bold Gemara here, which I would say is not exactly illogical. Yet, right on the very same Gemara, comments Tosfos. Tosfos says, whoa, 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 whoa. Rabbi Yudin likes to say, right? Hold on. Who omer la'alos? Eino noheg banazeh. No. This mitzvah of moving to Israel no longer applies in this generation. Why? De'ika sakanat derachim. It's very, very dangerous to travel. You can't travel safely anymore. Now, again, this is Tosfos talking about, you know, 1,000 years ago. We're talking about a very long, long time ago. And obviously, you know, travel conditions, Baruch Hashem, have improved. But what I want to draw from that Tosfos is that Tosfos is thinking about this question logically, i.e., don't risk your life to make Aliyah. Yeah, maybe risk your marriage, but don't risk your life. So there's a tension that is being drawn in here about how logical should we be, where the Gemara seems to be saying, even though you were taught to always have shalom bayis, throw it out the window for Aliyah. Yet Tosfos is saying, listen, health is always first. You don't risk your life to make Aliyah. And here is where we want to open up the conversation about really, you know, how logical or how illogical should Aliyah be? It's not an easy question. It's really not a simple question. So I don't know if anyone wants to unmute themselves and weigh in on the conversation, but I've seen people make Aliyah and they have not really, had answers of how you're going to make a living there. The answer sometimes is, I'm not really sure, I'm just going. And then I've seen people who have really, got their job together and their American jobs carry over, and it was a formal, 5-year plan, and they asked their boss, can I work in Israel? And I've seen other people who have tried to logically make Aliyah, and they say the American job doesn't work out, you can't convert it over to Israel, and they therefore do not make Aliyah. So it's really all our practice. There are people who just go, they don't look back. There are people who go logically, and there are also people who don't go due to some of the logical considerations. So these questions were asked to the Rishonim, to the Achronim, and to the contemporary Poskim. One of the most famous Rishonim who we often Poskim like is the Trumas Hadeshin. The Trumas Hadeshin was asked, should I make Aliyah? And you know what he said? It depends. It's not so clear. The Trumas Hadeshin begins his answer by saying, listen, Bevadai shevach gadol umala yeshlo v'adam hadar be'eretz Yisrael. There's no question that there is a very strong advantage to living in the land of Israel. And all the more so, you live in Yerushalayim. But he says, I've heard some bad things. Says the Trumas Hadeshin, who lived in Germany, born in the late 1300s. He writes, I heard that there are Jews there who are anti-religious. That's what he heard. That's what he heard in the 1300s. He said, they're writing in the 1400s. He says, there are Rishayim over there, I heard. And he said, they contest religious practice. And he said, I also heard, ki ha-mizonot d'chukim. It's hard to afford a living over there. Can't pay for your food, right? Sounds pretty familiar, right? It's not so different between 2021 and like 1421, that there are religious issues. There are also very practical issues that people can't afford to make a living. And he said, there are also non-Jewish people. He says, Godel Rishat Hayishme'elim, Hasher Lashan. I.e., there are, terrorists, or there are people who pose mortal danger, God forbid. And therefore, he says, you need to really make an honest assessment about your guf and your mamon. You have to know, is it safe? Can I afford it? And then here is the key conclusion and his thesis. You have to say, be'eze derech yuchal la'amod be'yirat Hashem u'bishmor mitzvosav ki zeh kol ha'adam. The entirety of man is the observance of the Torah and the mitzvos. And you have to ask yourself, where will you better serve Hashem? Wow. What an amazing response to the Trumas Hadeshin. And that answer will not be the same for everybody. One of the things that Nefesh B'Nefesh highlights are that people feel like they want to be better Jews in Israel. Especially, we'll say, singles who are getting a little older. It's very hard to hold on religiously. Sometimes if you are single and you're getting older, and that there's a very large community of singles in Eretz Yisrael. And people sometimes feel like the best way to hold on to Torah and Mitzvos is to move there. And we know, there's just a difference in the atmosphere. Sometimes people feel they can... Sometimes people feel that they can more easily serve Hashem in America, and sometimes not. And again, personally, I'll tell you that this is a very common question for people in the profession of chinuch. Myself, you know, it's Rav Schechter was asked by one of the former Rosh Yeshiva states, chief rabbis of Israel, Avram Shapiro, asked of Herschel Schechter Shlita, why don't you make Aliyah? And Rav Schechter started telling him about all the ways that he helps the Jewish community in America. I give a shir here, I write shuvas here, and blah, blah, blah. You know, very similar to Rabbi Yudin. I am helping Chalal Yisrael all day, every day. You know what Rav Avram Shapiro told Rav Schechter? He said, you're not allowed to make Aliyah. And I would imagine that Rav Avram Shapiro would say a very similar thing to Rabbi Yudin, i.e., you know, who's going to take care of Peter Weissman, right? If Rabbi Yudin makes Aliyah, right? Who's going to, you know, Fair Lawn needs Rabbi Yudin, right? I.e., you need leadership here as well. You need leadership here as well. And this affects the high school rebbeim and all the rebbeim, frankly, of America, right? It's a very sensitive shaila to people who are Torah educators and the religious leaders in America. And if they would not be able to service Klal Yisrael the same way in Israel, it's a very, very sensitive question. But certainly people on the caliber of Rabbi Schechter, Rabbi Yudin, you know, are, will say, recommended to not make Aliyah. And the questions go on. The questions go on. So that was a tshuva written in the 1400s. And a very logical answer. Are you going to be safe? Are you going to be able to serve Hashem? And then going down in history, the Me'il Tztaka, a Talmud of the Maharam, in Prague, a Gadol of Prague himself as well, lives in the 1700s, 16th to 1700s. And also, he was asked about, should I make Aliyah, should I not make Aliyah? And there were a lot of Zionists. There was a group of families that wanted to go to Israel. And they asked the Me'il Tztaka, should we all go together or not? And people were telling them not to go because they said, well, they're little kids. It's not safe to travel. So they asked the Me'il Tztaka, what should you do? The Me'il Tztaka said, listen, if it's obviously dangerous, you can't go, but it's not dangerous. There are boats that go there. So boats go every summer. Okay, so boats are dangerous. You never know if there are going to be pirates along the way, he writes. Okay, so everything's dangerous, but if it's part of the world, it's part of the world. He has this line, Kol she'ein bo sakana mitchadeshet. As long as there's not a unique new danger, yeah, we still apply the law to go to Israel. But then he concludes, he says, there's one major point. So assuming it's safe to travel, you need to make sure, guess what? You have a makom muchan u'mezuman liyot manui lo sham parnasa berevach. Ooh. You need to be able to afford it and live comfortably. That's where Mandelstam comes in, right? So not everyone has a job that could be converted to Eretz Yisrael. Say most people, if you ask them, why didn't you make Aliyah? They would say finances. What do you mean? I have a job in America. I don't know how I would make a living in Israel. And the Me'il Tztaka writes Lahalacha, that is a huge consideration. And he does not recommend that one make Aliyah if they are not certain how they will make money. And now he added one controversial word there. He said, berevach, i.e. to live comfortably. Now there is a fascinating question about what if I can live poor in Israel, but not comfortably? Or what if I will need to collect tztaka? So that is already two, but the poskim seemingly all agree that one should not make aliyah, you will need to collect tztaka in Israel. But then there is a little bit of a machlokas there. What if I can make aliyah and live, we'll say, less comfortably, but I can still afford life? And that is a very, very sensitive question. To live comfortably in America versus living less comfortably in Israel. So seemingly the Me'il Tztaka is saying live comfortably, right? He added that word, beravach. Now that's only one interpretation of the Me'il Tztaka. There are a svarim which actually deal with the question that I am that I'm speaking about right now. I'll give you an example, a little show and tell. This is a sefer called Alon Ale. Alon Ale is a sefer written by a Talmud of Rav Shlomo Aviner Shlita. The entire sefer is a response to the Satmar Rebbe's essay about not moving to Israel. He dissects the essay respectfully, brilliantly, and he deals with this meal stuck. It's a wonderful sefer. It's also a little bit hard to get your hands on it because Rav Avinar actually has his own printing press. He's such a prolific author. He has his own printing. And he deals with this question, this gray zone of what if you can afford it, but you can't really live comfortably. Fascinating question. And then, but again, the meal stuck, like the Truma Sadeshin, is addressing the question very, very logically, head on. Can you afford it? Is it safe, etc.? And that reminds us of Tosfos, right? Meaning, is it safe? Tosfos, you know, also had religious considerations. Will you be able to observe the mitzvos there properly? The famous shita known as Rav Chaim Kohn shita and Tosfos and Ksubos over there. And then more contemporary, Rav Moshe Feinstein. Rabbi Yudin, have you ever spoken with Hagaon Rav Moshe Feinstein? Did you interact with him in your lifetime? Yeah, no, you're muted. You're muted. I just want to know if, I don't know if you're able to unmute yourself. Yeah.
A little bit, yes.
Whoa.
Number one, I was privileged to go to RJJ, which at that time was located around the corner from Teferis Yerushalayim. So my first interaction with Rav Moshe, I went as a delegation. How should I say it? I'll tell you the truth. That's all. This is the reality. What did we go for? We went to ask Rav Moshe if at our high school graduation, he thought it was proper for us to wear caps and gowns. Okay? I'm glad I didn't go myself. Okay? So he certainly did not wipe the floor with us, not at all, but we did not wear caps and gowns. That much I could, that was my first. My next, or really my very big contact with Rav Moshe is with a story that I really cannot tell. It will take a long time. It's very fascinating went with Chevy and will never forget the incredible sensitivity. And Baruch Hashem, as a result of his having big shoulders, there is a family in Israel today that, you know, I am exceedingly grateful. So the answer is yes. The man was in stature. He was short. The man was a giant.
Wow. Okay. So we're talking about a man who reviewed him. Was clearly in touch with and Chevy, which is pretty cool. So that's fascinating. And Rav Moshe is asked this very question, how should we go about Aliyah in our generation? And he explains, listen, you don't need to make Aliyah. If you needed to make Aliyah, then we would all have to get up and go. He says, clearly that's not the way we interpret this halacha. It's not forbidden to live in America. And then he concludes by saying what's called, it's an ideal thing to do. But again, he concludes by saying, you have to be concerned over what Tosfos said. Are you going to be able to properly observe the mitzvos there? Now that nowadays is not as much of a consideration, but it's still very much, you know, again, Shemitah, etc. You have to know what you're doing over there. So you don't need to go. And if you go, just be careful to make sure that you know what you're doing. So I myself have an amazing Yom HaAtzmaut story. And this is where we're going to turn the tone over to the Rav Kook Eretz Yisrael tone. So Yeshivat Shalavim is where I attended for 2 years after high school. And the minhag in Shalavim is to walk, really hike from Shalavim, which is right by Modi'in, to the Kotel on Yom HaAtzmaut. It's an entire day. We go before Vasikin. We stop to daven Vasikin. And then we continue hiking towards Eretz Yisrael. And we get there by Marav time. Wow. And then we get driven back. Okay. We stop for shawarma on the way. And we had a stop on the way at a gas station, like every good hike in Israel. And you get some ice cream, you get some water, whatever. And it happened to have been a Shemitah year, my Shana Aleph. And I'm at the gas station and eating ice cream or drinking water or whatever. And the minhag in Eretz Yisrael is to barbecue like crazy and to go to the beach on Yom HaAtzmaut. And there I am. I don't know if I sat next to them or they sat next to me. But imagine the three of the punkiest looking Israelis ever on the way to the beach. You have two people who were like motorcycle drivers. They were dressed like motorcyclists. And one woman, again, Rabbi Yudin and Chevy will forgive me, you know, let's just say it was clear that they were going to the beach without going into details. So I'm sitting hanging out with my new friends over here. And I think one of them was eating a salad. And they were about to throw it out. And I said, let me throw it out for you because it's a Shemitah year. You have to put it in a special bag. And here you have this woman, again, you know, on the way to the beach. And she says, well, what's Shemitah? And I start giving a shear at the picnic table at the gas station. I said, well, this is the seventh year. And your salad has Kiddushah. And she says, really? And she's all excited. And I'm not saying she did shuvah on the spot and I didn't marry her. But, you know, ultimately, the point is that in Eretz Yisrael, stories like this happen. And that's not the only story like that happened where someone who was not religious wanted to know more about the Torah and is genuinely curious. And here's where we have like this Rav Kook philosophy of it doesn't always need to make sense. It just doesn't always need to make sense. Eretz Yisrael is allowed to exist on a higher plane. You're going to interact with different types of Jews, and things are not going to be predictable sometimes. And you might even teach the laws of Shemitah to someone you might never expect it to teach it to. So I'll tell you an amazing Gemara. The Gemara says that Rabbi Zeira was on the way to Eretz Yisrael, and he unfortunately missed the boat. So you know what he did? Well, there was a short plank of wood, and he was able to stand in it and hold onto some rope and hold onto the rope and balance himself appropriately and cross the river. And there was a non-believer, a tzaduki, who criticized him and said, I'm a peziza, this nation who is impetuous. Because when were we impetuous? When we said Naseh v'nishma at Har Sinai. And there's a similar Gemara in Maseches Shabbos, which says that Rava was learning Torah, and he was so engrossed in his learning, he was sitting on his fingers, and he caused his knuckles to bleed. And an observer, another Karaite, someone who did not believe in the Torah Shebaal Peh, criticized him and said, you Jews, you don't think, you just act. Look at you guys. And in both Gemaras, Rabbi Zera responds and says, do you know how fortunate I am to go to Israel? Moshe and Aaron couldn't get there. I'm going to Israel, whether it makes sense to you or not. And Rava says, do you know what it means to learn Torah? Do you know what it means to believe in God? It doesn't need to make sense to you or not. And what we know is at Har Sinai, we did not make our decision to sign up for the Torah based on logic. Naseh v'nishma means there are certain decisions in this world that transcend logic. And the Rav also writes about this. And last year, not this COVID year, but literally very, very close to when COVID hit, it was probably, you know, the second to last Shabbos we were in shul. Last year, Tzvi Fisher, Dr. Fisher, brought in an Israeli guest who does great things up in the north. And it happened to have been Parshas Mishpatim, the Parsha where we read about Naseh v'nishma. And because of Soloveitchik, I introduced him because he spoke at the downstairs minyan. And I said, this man was Mekayim, fulfilled the mitzvah of Naseh v'nishma. Because it did not make sense for him to make Aliyah in the 1970s and to be a pioneer up in the north. And he just did it. And he got up and said, that's exactly how it was. We were just excited to move to Israel. And it was Naseh v'nishma. It didn't make sense. And we just went. And here you have a Gemara which exactly compares making Aliyah. Rabbi Zeira says, I'm going to Israel based on Naseh v'nishma. It's a Gemara in Maseches Ksuvos, which compares the decision to go to Israel to the decision to accept the Torah. And I'm going to read to you an amazing thought of Rav Kook. Mendy, I want you to buckle your seatbelt. This might scare you. You ready, Mendy? Okay, here it is. This is another show and tell. This is one of my favorite Svarim, An Angel Among Men. This is a biography of Rav Kook, but not only a biography, really is the Torah of Rav Kook from Rav Simcha Raz. And he says that there was a professor, Nachum Rakover. I'm not sure, I'm probably not pronouncing his name properly. He said the anecdote. A diaspora Jew once came to the Rav for some advice. He had been touring the Holy Land and wanted to explore the possibility of settling there. During the conversation, the man presented the pros and cons of living in the land, making numerous calculations to try and determine whether or not it was worthwhile for him to make the move. What was Rav Kook's response to this person's logical approach?
That's it. Malam Teva.
Oh, Before the Israelites entered the land, they killed Sihon, king of Heshbon. This says that in order to enter the land, one must do away with all of his Heshbonot, with all of his calculations, right? The word Heshbon means a calculation, and was also the name of a king, the name of the location. And it's not a coincidence, says Rav Kook, that they needed to do away with Heshbon before going into Israel. And similar stories in the Sefer page, that was on page 257. There's a very similar story on 259. And again, a similar story where someone wanted to not make Aliyah based on logical considerations. And it says that the Rav banged his hand on the table and said with great emotion, "Your das is to return, to not make Aliyah. That is nothing but lack of das. That is a lack of logic." In what Rav Kook is saying is that I'm not crazy. I actually have your best intentions in mind. I'm not telling you to be reckless. I'm telling you it's going to work out. Whoa. And this is a bold muscle that Israelis have that Americans need, we'll say, exercise with. And I wouldn't say it as much as Rav Soloveitchik himself said it. You know, logically, I would have assumed that this would be a machlokas between Rav Kook and the Rav. The Rav was very logical, very calculated, as you know, a brisker. But the Rav himself said, it's written in the Torah, the Rav's Chumash, in Bamidbar, Parshas Maaseh, when the Torah says, V'horashtem, that where the Ramban famously writes that there's a mitzvah to conquer the land of Israel, the Rav there writes and criticizes the community of America. He says, for all of those who have considerations to stay in America, i.e. based on the true Masadeshin, because it's better for your religious observance, you know who else had a really close connection with God? Moshe Rabbeinu. He was living in the Midbar with the Shechina, and the only thing Moshe wanted to do was Israel. Why did he want to go into Israel? He was with the Ribono Shel Olam. Says Rav Soloveitchik, evidently, there's more to the story. You can be one-on-one with Hashem in the Mishkan and the Ohel Moed, yet you still understand there's something lacking. Wow, if the Rav said that, I can say it. I wouldn't have said that on my own. I would have said the Mishkan sounds pretty good to me. You know, if I had to take a ticket either to the Mishkan or to Israel, I would have chosen the Mishkan. But we are learning another piece of the story, that sometimes the logic does not need to add up. And Yom HaAtzmaut is a day where Americans are required to ask themselves, am I being too precautious? Am I being maybe a little bit too logical? Letting, we'll say, God enter my logical progression. Is there a little bit more room for me to be flexible in my calculations? Would Rav Kook bang his hand on the table after hearing my story and say, you don't make any sense to me, Mandelstam, you American Jews, you know? And it wasn't only Rav Kook. The Rav also said it. Now, obviously, the Rav also, again, cautioned from making Aliyah. Again, everyone needs to know their own avoda. And I think it's important to remember the words of the true Masadeshen, your life is your religious observance. The place where you can keep the Torah and the mitzvos is where you should be. And I think in Fairlawn, how many of us only keep the Torah and mitzvos because of the rabbi and Chevy? Because we live in Fairlawn. So maybe you can argue that Fairlawn is like Eretz Yisrael. Oh, you know, and I'm not criticizing Chas Hashem. I myself am a proud, proud resident of Fairlawn, New Jersey. And my intention is to stay as I'm zochet to teach you, Talmidim, etc. But that being said, Yom HaAtzmaut is the day to ask ourselves the question, what would the Rav say to me? What would Rav Kook say to me? Are my calculations religious enough for the Ribon Shel Olam and for Rav Kook? So I think with this, we'll conclude the recording, and I'm happy to stay on with any questions.